dude, did you fuck this bread? You fucked the shit out of this bread. You don't fuck bread, God.
I had me a fish.
This is Sean
and Sarah,
and welcome to My Future Has Been Face Fucked, episode 7.
Holy crap.
As Sarah has just told me through the use of her hands.
Would you rather my toes?
Well, that would be a little bit harder to see, so, you know, I'm thankful for the hands.
Okay.
Less monkey-like as well.
Thank you.
You know how those monkeys are. But anyways, yeah, so 7 episodes in, doing stuff.
How do you feel?
I don't know. Obtuse? About it. I don't know, I like doing it, so
yeah.
Glad we keep doing it. And we've been more consistent, so that's always a positive.
Yay!
At least one a week, including our other things. If you haven't checked them out, we are doing a Ultimate Watchmen discussion series. So it's going to be like a limited series podcast that is meant to be a companion piece to articles Sarah is writing on the blog. So
yep.
If you check out www.mfhbff.wordpress.com, go check them out and read them for yourself and then listen to the podcast.
What an excellent plug.
I know, what it is an excellent plug. It's very self-serving. So anyways, having a lot of fun doing that, so we've been doing a lot of that kind of stuff. A lot more writing, you know, but we, you know, have been still watching movies and television shows and stuff like that.
Hence this.
Hence what we're doing now. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so before we get into the meat of this podcast, I guess we're going to go into what I'm going to start calling the stream zone.
Wow.
That is what
Did
the segment
Did you just think
is,
of that?
Yeah, that's what the segment is going to be called.
Okay.
The stream zone.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Streaming. So, yeah, we're going to, this is the, welcome to the stream zone. We're going to make some recommendations or talk about more or less what we've been
watching
on Netflix. That's really what it is. Netflix, because that's the only streaming service we have right now. I had Hulu and I tried out Amazon Plus or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah, it was all right.
That premium Amazon service. I mean, it's a lot of the same stuff that's on Netflix. There's a few other, like, awesome things. Actually was thinking about, because you can get the 30-day free trial, that's why I tried it. Amazon Prime, that's what it's called.
Yeah, Amazon Prime.
Yeah, and
sounds like a transformer.
I was thinking that maybe you should go on your account and do it.
Sure.
Sign up for the 30-day free trial so we could maybe, there's a couple shows in there I'd like to actually
as long
watch.
As we discontinue it before they start,
yeah,
raping my account.
You can do it right away. So which is nice. It was actually surprising that they allow you to, like, disconnect before your, like, time is out. So you can just sign up for the 30-day free trial.
And use it for a day.
Get it through your TV. Use it, and right away, like, go to the deactivation thing, and it's still on for 30 days. It just doesn't automatically charge you at the end of it. That's what I did. Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Because most of them make you, like, wait until the very end.
Right. And then you usually forget.
Although Hulu Plus, I think, has got a similar setup.
I don't really know much about Hulu Plus.
Because one time I tried Hulu Plus for, like, the 7-day trial period. Forgot.
Ooh.
And then had it for a month. And Hulu Plus, I don't know. Like, you gotta pay for it, and then you still have to watch advertisements. Like,
oh, yeah,
the
that's
TV shows
my friend
and
had
the
that.
Movies and all that stuff.
Yeah, my friend had it, and I didn't ever have it, but it was like.
The one cool thing about it, though.
It's like, I'm paying for this. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, the cool thing about it, like, most of the movies, though, aren't commercial free, and they have access to a good amount of the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
Most of the. There's a huge chunk of the Criterion Collection is on Hulu Plus.
Okay.
So that was cool. That was cool. I ended up watching a couple old movies I'd never seen, a couple I had seen not in a while. Like, I watched the original Blob, I think, because that's a Criterion movie.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But anyways, continuing on.
Yes.
So, Netflix, what have you been watching, sir?
I'm going to be completely honest. I've been watching Bridezilla's.
Yes, she has.
Which has been good
for me, because I've been getting a lot of reading done, so.
Yeah, well, no, I just thought it was funny, because we're going to be getting married in
a
year.
We're getting married next October
yeah.
2014.
And I just thought it'd be funny to watch a show like that, because it's hilarious. I mean, it gets kind of grating after, like, I would say 3 episodes in a row.
Well, because it's so... Because
they're all whiny bitches.
And the seasons, to note, like, the seasons on Netflix are the later seasons.
Yeah.
So, like, their formula is super set in stone. And there's probably... I asked you this question while you're watching it. Like, how much do you think of this is a put-on just because they know they're on a show called Bradzillas?
I think that it's a good mixture, but then, like, the one I was just watching before we decided to do the podcast, like, it wasn't really the bride. The bride just cries at everything, so they were calling her Cryzilla. It was the mom.
Yeah.
The mom was being, like, fucking...
super domineering and stuff.
Domineering and, like, even, like, over hair dye colors. That, yeah. Like, her daughter wanted, like, black hair for the wedding, and her mom was like, it makes you look gothic and sick and, like,
yeah,
just upsetting, and she, like, refused to pay for her daughter's hair dye because of that. It was really funny. And then she was like, I maybe overreacted a little bit. It looks fine.
Well, but she still has to pay for it, so if she doesn't like it, then I guess...
No, I understand that, but I'm saying that's what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, it's really funny because, you know, we're not gonna have a huge to-do when we get married, yeah, but it's funny to see, like, these girls, like, throwing hissy fits while their families are putting out, like, $20,000.
Oh, my God. They spend so much money on these things. And a lot of the people on that show are not, like, super wealthy. I mean, they try to put off the air that they are.
But they're not.
But they're not. It's just, like, spoiled kids, basically.
Yeah.
Like, demanding they get these extravagant things because it's their special day and stuff. Which, of course, it is a special day. It's a special event. But, like, it doesn't... You gotta be... I don't know. Make compromises. You gotta be understanding. And you gotta, like, have... awareness of reality.
Like, one girl freaking out about, like, someone not putting a caramel apple in a bag right, like, she's calling her fiance an idiot because, like,
well,
he couldn't...
Yeah, come on.
No, but just, like, little things like that, and then, like, telling them to retie these tags because the bows don't look right, and yeah, they had, like, 160 of them to do.
The most fascinating thing I find about that show is the idea that people would voluntarily sign up for it. I mean, I guess there is this obsession with, like, this is their chance, that 15 minutes of fame
yeah,
thing. Like, oh, because people will just agree to anything if they're put on television. Like, you know, so, like, because the conceit of it, like, they know what it is. They know it's not going to paint them in a very positive light.
Way.
But I wonder, like, if in the back of their minds they think they're going to, like, prove the conceit wrong or something. Like, that they're going to show...
That was that, justified
that
in the end.
Yeah, that they're just, that, like, they're not the ones that are crazy.
But they are.
They are. I mean, part of that could be editing. I mean, there's so many things that go into the production of those shows. But, I mean, even... There's certain things that you that are very clearly edited, like the off-camera voices and stuff. And then somebody... the reactions are so, like, fucking cut.
My favorite was the one where they ended up after... during the reception, breaking up. Mm. And then they got an annulment.
No, but what I mean is just, like, it's just... There's a huge level of artifice in that show.
Yeah. Well, but that's with a wedding.
But then there's also things that you can't deny. Like, there is context for it that they actually show as far as, like, you know, the ridiculousness of some of their attitudes and stuff like that. There's no way... They don't have to, like, artificially create some of those scenarios.
Right.
They artificially create a lot of the overblown reaction to it. Like, something somebody says makes it seem a lot more dramatic than it really is and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just... reality television 101 at this point.
No, I know, but I thought it was funny to watch a show like that, considering, like, we're kind of planning a wedding right now, so...
Yeah.
And I keep threatening to be one, but I'm not, because we're not going to be doing anything extravagant, really,
so... No, we're going to have the best, funnest wedding ever.
Hell yeah.
Because we're too laid back to...
Care
that much about...
I don't care about ribbon.
A stupid thing like that. Like,
no, yeah. So, let's see. Still watching Cheers, too, because there's, like, 8 million episodes.
Yeah, still watching Cheers. I'm trying to think. What have we watched on Netflix?
Not much.
We haven't really watched too much Netflix, actually, lately.
We've been watching movies.
Outside of, like, what we were already watching before. Like, right. We're just continuing watching the same things. I'm trying to think of, like, a recommendation from Netflix I can make.
I don't know.
The Thing is on Netflix. You could always watch that.
I recommend it.
Well, actually, maybe that might not be on there anymore. That might be incorrect.
Oh, you don't even know.
No, it's on there. It's on there. Just search John Carpenter. Do not watch John Carpenter's The Ward. This is the latest movie he made. That's a terrible movie.
Oh.
It just had me like, you know, I guess, you know, you get old. People aren't good forever. So, yeah.
Ouch. Zing.
Adds a little bit more, like, veracity to the argument of Quentin Tarantino wanting to retire before he becomes an old man director. It makes me kind of like... Some of my favorite directors are from, like, the 80s. Like, David Cronenberg, John Carpenter. Like, I really have a great affinity for those directors and their early movies. But, like, the older they get, there is, like, this loss of edge.
Yeah.
That is just... Because I guess you're just old. Like, you just get older, you just get tired, you just don't care as much. Like, there's no... That fire that was inside you to create that kind of art is just not there anymore.
Right.
So, I guess it makes sense. It makes sense. So maybe some people are better off just quitting while they're ahead.
And maybe Tarantino will just keep producing or, like, bringing over movies.
Probably do that, and he says he wants to write, like, do film, long-form film criticism, stuff like that. Things he's not able to do as a director because he doesn't feel like it's right for him to be criticizing other people, like, to that depth while working in the medium.
Yeah,
so
that's
once
fair.
He separates himself from it, like, he'll be able to kind of reinvent himself as more of a writer. So I can respect that.
And supporter of WooWare.
And supporter, yeah, oh my god. the press junkets for Django Unchained got pretty silly.
Wearing the Sam Jackson Kangol hat, you know? Mm-hmm. He is Sam Jackson now.
It's all about continuity of presence, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I guess
it's like
that's...
I'm making a movie that's riff on blaxploitation movies, and so I'm going to dress in FUBU wear and stuff. It's funny, like, he should have been, like, half cowboy, half, you know, like, gangsta. If he really wanted to sell it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or just wore the first outfit that Django wears, that, like, blue ruffly outfit.
That would have been awesome. If he did the press tour like that, that would have been awesome.
Yes. Like, all of them dressed in that
fancy
clothes.
That's something I would do.
Yeah, you probably would.
I would. I'd do that. Well, I'd do that. I'm just going to the store, so.
Yeah, you would.
I don't really care.
Yeah, so I guess that's really it for Netflix this week.
Yeah.
Because we've been watching more movies and kind of doing stuff as opposed to watching Netflix.
Yeah.
Which I kind of feel good about for a change.
No, it's nice because there's like, you know, you get into like a rut of just watching. And the thing about Netflix, we've discussed this before, is like you watch some shit on there.
Like Bridezilla's.
There's so many good things on there that it just makes me like, why am I not like, I have the access to these like fantastic films and I don't watch them.
Right.
Like, I, you know, and it's part of it is also I share a Netflix account with the rest of my family, which causes some distress sometimes because you can only have two of them on at the same time.
Right.
But, and, like, a lot of my recommendations are based on, they watch it a lot more than I do, so a lot of the recommendations I get are based on things they watch.
And then they rate things
and
that we watch.
And they rate things, like, fucking super low that I would rate high. And stuff like that. Sometimes they'll just be fuckers, and sometimes because they're just, I don't know, entitled children.
Oh, don't be nice.
I'm joking. It's a joke, folks. It's a joke.
Yeah, so, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we got three movies to talk about today. We're going...
Some pretty good ones, actually.
Yeah, actually, all pretty good. We'll go in the order of depth that we're going to go into them, I suppose.
Yep.
So, if you see the title, you probably know. We saw The Conjuring,
mm-hmm.
Only God Forgives, and there's a new documentary, The Act of Killing. I wrote a review for The Conjuring. It's on the site, so if you want to, like, read...
What's
like,
that website again?
My future... Oh, mfhbff.wordpress.com. I'm not one for branding. But, like, anyways, there's a review for it on the site. It go into some more depth of criticism and stuff like that. We'll probably just kind of briefly touch on it on here. But so The Conjuring, we saw it last weekend. What do you think of it?
What I think of it?
Yeah.
I thought it was alright. You know, I'm starting to watch scary movies more, quote-unquote scary horror movies since we've been together.
Mm-hmm.
I was never one growing up to really watch them.
Yeah.
So, getting more into it as I get older, I suppose. Which, they were, like, big around my house, like my mom and my uncle.
Yeah.
But, I enjoyed it, though. It's the same director did Insidious, which you made me watch. You didn't make me watch. I asked to watch.
James Wan, yeah.
Yeah, James Wan.
Creator of Saw. That was where you got to start, actually.
Yeah, which the first Saw was okay.
It was okay, yeah.
Poor Man 7.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. but because I saw the trailer for Insidious 2 first, and I went back and asked you about it because my friend that I was with was really excited about it.
Yeah.
So we went and we watched it, and I really enjoyed Insidious.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we decided to go see The Conjuring. We went with your sister.
Yeah, and it gotten really good notices as being like kind of a true, quote-unquote, true horror film, and that it was kind of a back to essentials type style.
And it
kind
was.
Kind of reminiscent of, like, 70s horror haunted house movies.
And it was.
And it totally was. And it's a very faithful...
And fantastic costumes.
Yeah, fantastic, because it's a period piece in the 70s.
That's so weird to say that 70s, like a movie set in the 70s is a period piece.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a period piece.
That was so long ago.
Based on a maybe allegedly true story of from the case files of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah.
Some well-known paranormal investigators. They've been around since the 50s, actually.
Demonologist
and a psychic. Ed is a demonologist, Lorraine being the psychic.
Yep.
I see dead people and all that good stuff.
And I guess we should mention their most famous case was the
Amityville Horror.
Right.
Which is actually kind of what discredited them a lot. Especially as the years have gone on and, like, kind of the more that's revealed about that, the more kind of transparent the hoax is.
Yeah.
Like, there actually is another pretty decent documentary. It's called My Amityville Horror. It's about...
we watched that, right?
Yeah. It's about the son.
Yeah.
The son of the family that was, haunted at Amityville. And it kind of shows more that, like, okay, they are able to explain a lot. I don't think the movie takes a hard-edged, like, opinion on the matter. But from what you can see from this guy, former child... is that when he was a kid, the experiences he had where he was more just, like, terrorized, and he's got a lot of psychological problems because of it. Because of... I think his stepfather must just... And, like, kind of just created the story and would terrorize his kids with it.
Yeah.
And then found a way to market it and kind of sell his story. Make a living off of it.
Right.
I mean, 2 years after the fact, there was the first... That's when the first movie was made. And I think there was, like, a movie of the week even before that.
Probably.
If
I had a haunted house, I'd do the same thing.
So they've been kind of discredited, so I guess the veracity of whether this is, like, based on true events or not is highly subject. I mean, there is actually the real family that is afflicted by this haunting in the movie The Conjuring wrote their own, like, book about it. And there's even, like, I think they're making their own documentary about it, like, the true story behind The Conjuring type thing. It'll probably show up on, like, the DVD special features or whatever.
Right. I don't know, but I thought the acting was really good. Even the children did really well in it.
Actually, I think the children are probably the real standouts, actually.
Yeah,
like, couple of the young actresses really kind of sell the terror and sell, like, remind you what it's like to be...
Like, the one with the short brown hair.
Yeah. Remind you what it's like to be a little kid staring into the dark and wondering if something's there. You know what I mean? Like, that's the sense of that is, like, really well put across.
Yeah.
You do a really good job.
Because that was actually the only time I jumped was when one of the kids, like, something happened but wasn't really happening. It wasn't, like, was supposed to be a super scary part, but one of the kids, like, jumped and I jumped.
Yeah.
But that was awesome. Like, you know.
Yeah.
It was, like, an accidental jump, and I felt like an idiot because nothing was happening.
And even though I think it's, like, a pretty methodically slow-paced movie... It doles out its information pretty slowly, and nothing feels rushed up until probably the last act of the movie is where it kind of starts
falling
apart.
Which is kind
of
the same with Insidious.
It's kind of the same way with Insidious. Like, that was... It's super straightforward and stuff like that, but it's never... I was never bored.
No, and like we've said before in these, my attention sometimes wanders really quickly, and I have to be in a certain mood to watch a slow-paced movie.
Yeah.
I was fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it moves along quick. It's like, so many things happen that, like, I guess it does have a decent pace. It moves at a good clip, but when it slows down for the important parts. And
I didn't feel the dialogue was ever super cheesy.
No.
So I was just like, you know, which is sometimes a thing with horror movies, you know. But so I kind of, like, if there wasn't a ton going on, it was enough to keep me listening to what they were saying.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for my, like, overall... thought of it is that, like, it's super straightforward, which is refreshing, but at the same time they could have done some more complex things with it, I suppose, as far as just, like, I kind of would have liked it, like, if it was uncertain whether or not they were actually being haunted for a while and let being used as a reveal, like, maybe towards the last, like, third of the movie or something.
That's, yeah,
that they, because, you know, like, have, like, because from the get-go it is very clear, like, no, this is real, we're being haunted. There's no question about it, you know what I mean? So it kind of would have been a little bit more interesting if there was kind of more of a quote-unquote investigation into it.
Yeah.
But that's, like, it's not what they were going for. And that's just more of, like, a personal opinion about it. Like, it doesn't need to be that way at all. Actually, if you want something like that, there's a really great movie, or a movie that I enjoy a lot, is The Last Exorcism.
Yeah, you were talking about that. I haven't seen that yet.
It's pretty good. Very...
We'll have to add it to the queue.
It's a character. It's like more of a character piece. I like. But yeah, so everything's pretty successful in this movie.
Yep.
I mean, I wasn't blown away, but I think a lot of that has to do with now I know James Wan's kind of wheelhouse. I know what he's working with, kind of.
His wheelhouse? Is he a sailor?
Yes. A sailor of the horrible horror scenes.
A sailor of terror.
Like, so, because, like, Insidious, I actually was creeped out by. Like, I found that to be kind of a creepy...
Did you see it in theaters first?
No, I didn't, actually. I saw it when it came out on DVD. Because I didn't know. Like, the idea of, like, a movie from the creator of Saw did not, like... Excite me all that much. Not because I hate Saw, at least the first one. Like, I don't hate it or anything, but, like, it doesn't blow my mind.
It's no 7.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, because that's why I saw 7 before I saw Saw. Like, I grew up watching movies that were... That Saw is very derivative of. So none of it was very new or revelatory to me like it was
still,
to some people
It was
my
still,
age.
Like, kind of fascinating when it first came out, though. I saw it in theaters when Saw came out, and I remember and I remember being like, yeah. But just that first one, though.
Yeah. So I think, like, maybe the awareness of how he was going to set up scares...
Yeah.
...lessened its impact. If I hadn't seen Insidious, maybe it would have been more effective on me.
Maybe.
But, I don't know, people seem to be... going with it, though. People are really liking it. They're calling it the best horror film since The Exorcist, which I think is a fair comparison. It has a lot in common with The Exorcist in pace and style. It's very much a throwback movie to, like, the 70s era haunted house
which
movie.
I think is good. It does justice for the story. It's, you know, it's set in the 70s, so to kind of, like, mimic the style.
Yeah, the filmmaking style of the time actually makes a lot of sense. It works.
Instead of, like, a modern 70s story. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It's extremely cohesive. Like, it's very well thought out, cohesive, like, filmmaking and storytelling. The one thing I did, as far as character perspective, had kind of a problem with is, like the subplot with the Warrens and their child is really undercooked and kind of doesn't even have, like, any kind of...
Hold
at the end. It kind of just drops it.
Yep.
And doesn't really delve into it too far. And it kind of makes... I feel like it's probably a victim of editing, and it's probably... probably was more in the movie that further kind of explored the themes... their family dynamics and stuff like that.
Probably.
Maybe
we'll find out with the director's cut.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe there'll be deleted scenes or something. I don't expect him to do a director's cut. I don't think
he
does
director's
cuts.
Well, that's what I meant, though, is...
Yeah, we'll find out, maybe, with the DVDs or the Blu-rays.
Maybe.
But yeah, so overall, I'd recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
At least a rental. I don't know if I'd necessarily go see it in a theater.
I kind of thought some of the sound was effective in the theater, though.
It's true, yeah, because it is kind of more of a full immersive experience with the speakers.
Yeah, we sat kind of closer to the screen than we normally did, and I liked that.
Yeah, it worked really well.
Boom.
So, the other movie we watched is Nicholas Winding Refn's Only God Forgives, his second collaboration with Mr.
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling, Sarah's favorite.
It started in irony, and now it's not.
I think he's actually becoming, like, a pretty good actor.
I do, too.
And I think this movie is a good example of using him correctly, in the same way I thought...
Are we going to spoiler this movie?
Yeah, this is going to be spoilers.
Because I wanted to talk about some things, but I didn't want to give away too...
Yeah, we'll spoiler the shit out of this movie.
Okay.
So...
Well, spoiler...
First, let's just give our general opinions before we get into spoiler territory. Okay. What did you think of it?
Besides Ryan Gosling being hot?
Yeah.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, me too. And this movie has been super... even more split. It's not a 50-50, like, split. It's like, I think it only has, like, on Rotten Tomatoes, if you look, it's like 34% freshness.
Really?
Yeah, people hated this movie. I think it got booed at Cannes. Like, I don't understand why. Like, it's... maybe it's a little too on the nose for some people. It is a little clunky as far as, like, subtexts. Like, it's
with, like,
super
some of the imagery is a little throws you off too sometimes, I think. But
we'll get into that when we get into spoilers.
No, but I'm just saying that was being general.
I'm sorry.
Whoa, still your role.
No, it has, like, a very dreamlike, surreal quality throughout the movie that's persistent throughout the movie, and it deals with, like, family, loyalty, what am I looking for?
I don't know. Not in your brain.
Context of justice, like the something of morality. Like how perspective affects your moral foundations and stuff like that. It's the relativity of justice and morality. That's the word.
Ooh.
Relativity is the word I'm looking for. But yeah, so, and I think it's pretty successful. It's very straightforward. It's really short. It's like 89 minutes long.
Yeah, Held me.
Held me. It's slow, though.
Liked it better than Drive.
It's slow. It feels longer than it probably is. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the way the story is told. It's super fucking... It's glacially slow at points.
Yep.
Where that movie spends a long time with the beautiful camera shots, like, following people really walking.
It was a really pretty movie.
Yeah. The cinematography is fantastic. Like, every shot is framed like a painting.
And pretty colors.
Yeah. And there's a lot of long takes. There's not a lot of, like, cutting.
Nope.
It's a lot of, like, very, very... Just, like, things are played out in really long takes. But I think it's effective because it's supposed to, like, bring you into their mindset, right?
Right.
So, it works. I think overall it's worth your time.
I agree.
Especially if you can rent it. It's a video on demand right now and in small run in theaters. It's like $8. So, it's like, you know, the price of a movie ticket, basically. But you only have to pay for it once.
Yeah.
And not have to buy multiple tickets. So, I'd give it a recommend if you're interested. If you like Drive and you've liked Nicholas Winding Refn's other movies like Bronson and Valhalla Rising, it's got the most in common with Valhalla Rising. I would say check it out.
No, it's funny. I didn't like Drive too much.
Yeah, that's right. You're not a.
I have to rewatch
fan.
It. Yeah, but I don't know. I like this one. I haven't seen his other films. I'd like to see Bronson.
Bronson's fantastic. This is his most like. I say like it's most like Valhalla Rising, which is this weird like. Kind of in the same pace, very similarly, a lot of beautiful imagery and stuff like that, of like this Viking brutality.
Yeah, you've told me about it, and I've just never watched it.
It's really surreal, trippy, and strange, and kind of has no point. That movie's kind of pointless, though. But those are like, I guess, art house films.
Yeah.
Like, as far as you could consider like his other movies, because before that, he had this pretty straightforward like crime trilogy called Pusher, about like kind of drug dealers and stuff like that. And that's also, they're really, really fantastic. But anyway, so let's open up the spoiler territory, sir. So we're spoiling things as of right now.
Well, I don't know where I want to start. What do you think about the mom?
I think she's, a good character.
Do you know what I thought about her?
What?
Norma Bates.
Yeah, a little bit like Norma Bates, which coincidentally is played by Vera Farmiga in Bates Motel,
yeah.
Who also was in The Conjuring.
Yeah.
There you go. No, but, except more domineering in a menacing way.
Yeah.
It's more malevolent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like...
Because I even mean the special relationship, quote-unquote.
Yeah, because it's basically pretty strongly implied that she has an incestuous relationship with both of her sons.
Poor Julian.
And, she kind of... what is it? Kind of, like... Puts her oldest son, the one that gets murdered, or dies, or murdered. I guess murdered.
Yeah, he was murdered.
And up on, some type of pedestal. He's almost, like, deified
puts
him.
That
puts
D,
him at, like, legendary
puts
status.
Puts that D on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Literally at one point.
Yeah, literally.
Talks about his wang.
Talks about her kid's wangs and how Julian's dick was huge, and Ryan Gosling's dick.
No, Ryan Gosling was Julian.
Oh, sorry. What's the other name?
I don't remember the other brother's name.
Okay.
Julian's
penis is big, but not as big as the bigger brothers, the older brothers.
They're both very nice.
Yeah, they're both very nice, don't get me wrong.
Ugh.
But, so there's, and that's kind of present. It's very Freudian. Like, it's...
Yeah.
And very obviously Freudian. Like, it's so fucking obvious. Like, I don't understand how somebody could watch this that has any awareness of the outside world or anything and not, like, pick up what the themes are of this movie.
Yeah.
Well, as far as his character themes, his arc that he goes on about kind of this tortured by wanting acceptance from his mother, but also at the same time being repulsed by her, had a similar relationship with his brother that's kind of implied. The mother frames it as, like, he's jealous, when he frames it as, like, I don't think he was jealous.
Yeah, I don't think he was either.
No. But his mother kind of just puts that on him. Imposes that, like, kind of idea on his psyche.
He's a dangerous boy.
Yeah. I mean, like, what do you think about, like, the dream imagery and stuff like that? Because the movie would go in and out of without...
Really telling
alerting
you.
Alerting you, except you'd have to pay attention to what people were wearing.
Yeah.
That's what, like, he would have different colored shirts on while he's, like, basically imagines himself watching himself, like, touching girls and stuff like that.
But he's not. He's completely, like you said, neutered by women.
Yeah, he's neutered by women. Like, so if you take, like, this incestuous relationship that he had him and his brother had was his mother. Like, his brother turned into, like, a crazy, violent misogynist. Ryan Gosling went totally the other way and is, like, totally neutered and, like, does not know what to do. Sort of, like, socially immature, underdeveloped.
Yeah.
Like, in certain ways. Like, kind of a simple...
They're the extremes of it.
A simple guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that... and then I thought, like, the message of justice was really interesting between character and character.
Oh, yeah, because they have, like, the cop. The Taiwanese cop, who's fantastic in this movie. I don't know the actor's name, but he was really awesome.
I loved his karaoke.
Yeah. I think... just another thing we'll talk about in a second here. But, like, his character is awesome. But the guy is... Well, I mean, as his performance is awesome. But he's kind of detestable in his own way.
Yeah.
Everyone in this movie. His sense of morality and justice is... It's connected to the Freudian thing of, like, I guess, parents and their kids.
Yeah.
Because, like, the reason why he is the way he is because he has a daughter.
Yeah.
And so he's into, like, old-fashioned punishment, almost like
Hammurabi, almost.
Yeah.
Eye for an eye.
Eye for an eye. Like, very samurai-esque, even to the point where he carries around a samurai sword, like, punishing people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not necessarily killing them, not all the time, but maiming them, for sure. Like, to say, like, okay, you've committed this sin, and so you don't do it ever again, I'm going to cut off your hand.
Hammurabi shit.
Yeah.
You stole something from someone, I steal your hand.
Mm-hmm. So, it's, you know, so, but, like, his character juxtaposed with, like, Ryan Gosling's character, like...
Pretty much on the same...
Almost on the same path, because Ryan Gosling's brother was murdered... as a consequence of raping and brutally murdering
a 14-year-old girl. No, she was 16. He wanted a 14.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's right.
He goes to a whorehouse and asks for a 14-year-old and asks for the, like, runner of the whorehouse's, like,
daughter. Yeah.
And he said no. So he, like, beats everyone in the freaking...
Yeah, trashes the place, gets kicked out. It cuts to him, like, with, you know, obviously he got roughed up and he's walking down the street, finds some dive whorehouse.
And gets a 16-year-old. And he, like, does what he does to her and then brutally kills her.
Yeah. So, when the Taiwanese inspector comes up, he lets her father / pimp, you know, he asks him, well, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you stop this? Why didn't you do anything about it?
Why were you letting your daughter be a whore?
Well, that's before, no, before that.
Oh.
Like, and he's just like, I'm going to give you the opportunity to do whatever you want. And he just closes the door and walks away.
Yeah.
And while the father / pimp, like, beats...
And kills.
Beats Ryan Gosling's older brother to death with, like, a 2x4. Or, like, a piece of a chair or something. Like, really nasty. It's a really nasty,
it's
like...
It's a gory scene once it's all said and done.
Well, because you only see the aftermath. You don't see the actual gore. You see shadows. And then it cuts back to, like, this dude's head just caved in. But this Taiwanese cop has, like, his moral compass is weird because he's like, I said you could do anything. I didn't say you had to kill him. And also, I want to punish you for pimping out your daughters.
Right.
So he cuts off the dude's fucking hand in, like, this, like, parking lot somewhere.
From, like, elbow down, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he never forgets his three other daughters.
So Ryan Gosling doesn't think that this guy unjustly killed his brother. He doesn't.
Yeah, because he has the chance to kill him, and he doesn't. And then the mother's, like, pissed. She was like, why couldn't you do it?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't you, like, avenge your brother?
She
like, he would have avenged you.
Yeah, and she says, like, if he did what he did, then he must have had his reasons. When, you know, Ryan Gosling tries to explain her, he fucking raped and killed a teenage girl. Like, I'm not gonna chase down these people. But then it ends up being, like, this kind of light cat-and-mouse game between Ryan Gosling and the Taiwanese cop. And, yeah, I mean, that's where this whole idea of, like, Ryan Gosling, the whole family loyalty thing comes into play. Like, he feels obligated to do something because of pressure from his mother, but he also doesn't want to do it, so he's kind of, like, half-assing it.
Yeah, and she kind of sadistically ropes him back into it because she, like, says, like, take care of this, and I will take care of you like I should have. Like, I will be a mom to you.
Yeah, I'll be a mother.
And
no, actually,
not, and
well, actually at that point, that's when he turns on her.
No, I know, but I think he, like, in a moment was, like, you know, had that thought of her.
Oh, yeah.
Because then I think what drives that is when he finds her dead from the Taiwanese cop kills her.
Yeah.
He, like, cuts into her womb, kind of, and, like, feels her womb.
Which,
like,
is a reference back to, like, these fantasies he has about, like, basically fingering this prostitute, which he's not actually doing. But it's also, I think, a reference to the Doubting Thomas story from the New Testament.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, about feeling her rib to make sure, seeing if it's real.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Larray, he just wants acceptance from her. However conscious or subconscious it is, he just wants to be accepted by her. So when she kind of dangles the idea of actually being a mother in front of him, he definitely entertains it. Almost goes through with it.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
But he doesn't, and lets what happens, happens. He lets the Taiwanese detective, or muscle, cop muscle, whatever he is, kill his mother. I think he knows
that's what's happening. Yeah.
Because he goes to this guy's house and is waiting for him to come home, and then his daughter comes home first, and the guy he's with wants to kill the little girl because his mother said kill everybody.
And he killed her nanny.
And he kills the other guy he's with kills the nanny, and then goes to kill the daughter, and Ryan Gosling stops him.
Kills him.
Yeah.
Shoots him a lot. But yes. Then doesn't touch the little girl.
And just leaves.
Yep. Here, you deal with this massacre, little one.
And then there's kind of, at the very end, and further to the point that, like, Ryan Gosling agrees with this Taiwanese detective or muscle or whatever. And it's unclear whether this is a dream sequence or it actually happening. The Taiwanese detective enacts the same type of justice he has enacted on other people by, like, cutting off their hands to Ryan Gosling. But you don't know if it's actually happening.
Or if it's
a dream.
Right.
Because in the beginning of the movie, Ryan Gosling actually had visions of this happening to himself.
Of his arm being cut off.
Of his arms being cut off. And this Taiwanese detective being the one to do it. So I'm not sure. That's the only part I felt was ambiguous, and purposely so, I'm sure, obviously. But, and you extrapolate whatever you want from that, whether it's actually happening or not, but it gives you a glimpse into where his mind is at the end. So there is a catharsis there. There is closure.
Right.
Because even whether it's happening real or in the dream world, like, or in a vision or whatever, like, it shows you his mental disposition. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think of, like, people just kind of really hating it? Do you understand that? Or can you see where people are coming from? Or I've heard the words, like, pretentious being thrown around a lot.
I could kind of see that. And it might just be his style. I mean, kind of like with Drive, you know, it's like a lot of, like you kind of said, like, art house, like, super imagery.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's really effective and sometimes it's not. Or, like, you kind of said the ending was kind of, like, ambiguous.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when movies are like that, that kind of scares people away or, like, confuses people, and then they just turn on it as opposed to, like,
because they don't want to take the effort to understand it because it wasn't spelled out for them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what general public... That happens with some movies sometimes. Well,
even like serious movie crowds, you know, like the people that review films for a living and stuff like that, was they had a very caustic reaction to the movie.
I don't know why,
like,
though.
They said it's too slow and it's
I thought it was paced fine.
Overly pretentious. I think it's exactly what it wants to be. I think it accomplishes the goals that it sets out for itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it feels like a full cohesive experience.
Yeah.
It's not a bunch of half-baked ideas thrown at the wall and they saw what stuck. You know what I mean? Like a lot of art house movies are, where they just kind of throw imagery randomly and fucking shit everywhere just to see, to, like, cause a reaction in its audience rather without purpose, really,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't, like, move its story forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything feels like it's properly motivated.
And I think, like I was kind of saying, I think because you have to, like, it actually kind of makes you think about the modes of justice and, like, where everyone's intention is. Like, it's not always super obvious. It's kind of in the subtext.
Yeah.
I just don't think people would give it enough didn't give it enough time, maybe.
Yeah.
Because that is kind of, like, the more I think about the movie, the more I think about it. That's where the Norma Bates thing didn't hit me until I went to, like, I went upstairs to do something yesterday, and I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, subtle, like, slow fade in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it matches the pace perfectly if you're patient enough with it.
I think so. I think, yeah,
and it
right.
was, but it wasn't so slow also that it took my attention.
It wasn't, like, disengaging.
No.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the cinematography, how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
And how aesthetically nice it is just to watch the movie.
I think the colors were very effective in conveying mood.
Oh, totally.
Like all that red.
All the red and the blue, like neon type colors are really, really prevalent in the movie. And
it's kind of like a demon face with the red that's always there.
Yeah, red's
usually, it's a dragon, but...
It's a dragon, but it's also, I think, they're representative of, like, violence and passion and it's there to represent kind of, like, this warm, seething, bubbling underneath.
Yeah.
Where, because, like, the other characters, like, his brother, there's a scene when he's in that first, like, whorehouse.
It's blue.
And it's all blue, and, like, there's a...
He's red,
there's
though.
There's a certain, like, apathy there. Like, the dude is so apathetic, he does not give a fuck. And I think, like, the color blue, like, kind of sets you in that kind of mood, like, this cool, stone cold...
But he was red. The lighting on him was red.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, that's, like, a cool...
No, it's cool. Very cool juxtaposition of colors and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's a really beautiful movie to watch. So that's maybe partially the reason why I was never disengaged. Like I said, it works as a whole.
Yeah.
The sum is better than its parts, probably, I guess. Because the story is super anemic. It's so straightforward.
Yeah.
There's not even a lot there. Like, Ryan Gosling probably has, like, maybe, like, 10 lines of dialogue. I'm serious. There's not very much dialogue.
He doesn't speak for the first, like, half hour.
Yeah. At all.
Maybe that's why he was
so good.
Well,
and that's, I think, it, like I said before, like, when we first started talking about it was, like, this is something like Ryan Gosling being used correctly. Because I think...
Not talking.
Well, not just talking. I think what he's really good at is...
Long stares. Into the soul.
And, like, internal stuff.
Yeah.
Where, like, his, like, vacant stares and stuff like that convey more than, like, him saying a piece of dialogue could. He's really good at making you think that there are cogs turning in his head, I think. In my opinion. And it's I mean that over the past few years.
It's all in the eyes.
Like, if you go for, say, something like A Place Beyond the Pines and Drive and now Only God Forgives, I think those are movies where he's showing his maturity as a performer.
Yeah.
And, like, cause I think
opposed to Gangster Squad.
That was just a bad movie. Nobody's good in Gangster Squad. But, like, I don't know. I think, like, he got a lot of attention when his first, like, kind of breakout, like, as far as acting goes, was Half Nelson.
Yeah.
And it's a really histrionic performance. It's not really, it's just, like, that movie got a lot of attention because of the political subtext of the movie. And he's overrated in that movie, so I think he got a lot of attention because of it, because he got nominated for an Academy Award and stuff like that, probably unjustly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people put on him, like, a preconception that he's more talented than he actually was at the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's a child actor. He's growing up.
Mickey Mouse Club.
Getting better. Like, all actors, I imagine, you know? Like, you grow up,
you get
better.
Yeah, don't say Half Nelson was his first acting gig. It was the Mickey Mouse Club.
No, I didn't.
Thank you very much.
His first...
Singing songs with
Justin
Timberlake.
His first acting gig of, like, prevalence. Like, I think, you know, who's another good example of that? Like, Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger was kind of a vanilla, like, whatever actor until, like, the last couple years of his life.
Don't talk about 10 Things I Hate About You like that.
But he's not, like, doesn't stand out.
I know, that's a terrible movie.
The Taming of the Shrew, you mean?
Taming of the High School Marching Band?
Yeah, but overall, like, I don't know. I think it's totally well worth people's time. If you're into movies and you're into something a little bit more adventurous, maybe, as far as, like, artsy-fartsy stuff,
and you don't
really
mind blood.
You don't mind moments of extreme violence. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it.
I digs it.
Yeah, so that's gonna do it for Only God Forgives.
Can we take one more moment to reflect on Ryan Gosling?
Yes, we can. A moment of silence, if you please.
I'm kidding, I'm sorry.
So the last thing we're gonna talk about is something that I'd heard about a while ago, making rounds in festivals, a documentary, The Act of Killing.
I had never heard about it till you said something.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It's,
Or as you would say, wicked awesome.
I think it's actually, like, borderline. I hate throwing around this word when it comes to movies or art or anything important. Because I think it kind of transcends just being a documentary, just being a movie, because you are getting a glimpse into a side of human nature and the way...
And history.
And history and the way... Well, I mean, it's more about the fallout of history, but... I think it's as a character studies and, like, a piece about, like, sociology or in psychology, the inner workings of people.
Mm.
It's something that you very rarely ever get to see, because usually in movies, like, in interviews, you get to see with serial killers and stuff like that. They've been caught and they've been told what they've done is wrong. They're perpetrators,
right?
The people in this documentary. These death squads,
yeah,
these
death
killers,
squads.
These murderers, from, like, you know, they murdered, like, 2.5 million people within 2 years in 1965, 1967.
Yeah.
Like, these alleged communists, because the government, the powers that be, wanted to overthrow it. So what they did is they hired a bunch of the local gangsters and mafia and stuff like that to
create
work,
these squads.
Work as muscle and work as death squads and basically made them part of the military, part of the police, part of the structure.
Part of the political structure.
And a lot of those people are still in power. They took it, they're still there. And the rest of them, kind of the murder squads, they're looked at kind of as folk heroes. They're
like heroes, yeah.
Very proud of what they did. They have like these very odd justifications and stuff like that. And the way, as the movie unfolds, like you get to hear about just the sadism.
The inner workings, yeah.
But also, like, and like you, and the filmmaker asked these people to reenact what they did and show him how they did it and like basically make a movie. He kind of appealed to their egos so they would speak openly about things and candidly.
Yeah.
And when you, and I think this documentary was filmed like over like 6-7 years. So like once they were like towards the last like third of the movie especially, like there's like they capture some really powerful moments of like realization and discussion and like, and you can see the like these walls they've built in their minds of like how they've justified their actions kind of start to crack.
Yeah, especially with Congo.
There's this the guy, the main, basically the main subject of the documentary is Onward Congo.
Yeah.
He's the most open and he's the most torn about it, I think.
Yeah, and towards the end you see that.
Yeah,
he's like, you can even see just in the way he carries himself is a lot different.
His demeanor changes.
And I think it was really cool. They show these scenes of him sleeping, and I thought that was really neat because he slowly starts to talk about how they do kind of these killings like haunt him.
Yeah.
At night.
And as you go, like it's actually they make a point to show you, I think, you know, like that he becomes increasingly more restless in his sleep.
Yep.
As he's kind of going through this experience of having to relive these.
Because when he starts with the reenactments, like you see this kind of like old excitement in him.
Yeah, no, there is at first. It's
yeah,
very
he's like he's
especially
talking about
people.
Like showing him how he strangled people, like the people in the American movies did, all the gangsters in the American movies, because that's what they're kind of basing their behavior off of. Is they were the movie theater gangsters.
Yeah, because they would scalp tickets.
Yeah, they would scalp tickets, and then.
And then their impetus to get involved with the movement.
No, go ahead.
No, was the fact that these quote-unquote communists or the Commonwealth wanted to ban American movies, but American movies were so successful in the area, that's where these gangsters made all their money.
Yep.
So it was, like, very fucking petty shit. And that's why they were so, like, readily got involved, I guess.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then to see, like, the factions they're a part of, too, like, the leaders and, like, how, like, the main leader of the one group,
yeah.
He just goes golfing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, and
they have pretty normal lives.
But yeah, and they still to this day, like the one scene was really interesting too when they were like interrogating a man who like told his story about how his stepfather was killed for being a communist and he remembers it and he starts getting upset and then like they do this interrogation scene with him and
that's like the next scene is like
an
actor. You don't realize he's an actor. Like you
right.
don't know what he is when he's talking about like his story about how his stepfather was murdered.
Right.
You don't know what he is in context of this group.
Right.
And then you realize, and then they start doing this interrogation scene, and it starts, like, blending in, like, what you feel is maybe real.
Yeah, because at one moment you looked at me, you're like, you know this isn't, like, this isn't really, like, a fake interrogation. This is real. And I was like, yeah. Like, it felt so real, and the way he was, like, reacting, and the way they were acting was, like,
yeah, and
so intense, like.
Because I guess that must have been like their rehearsal because they all had scripts in their back pockets and like headphones on, like the DP and stuff like that. So, but the guy was selling it to such a degree, like I thought they were actually
going to kill him.
Going to kill him because they could get away with it, first of all, and second of all, because
he
it's
had
just
sort
like,
of like a communist or quote unquote communist
family.
Yeah,
but like, and these guys talk so. Plainly, like plain speak about the things that they do and about killing people, that when they're talking about killing him, quote unquote, and torturing him, like it doesn't seem out of place. It seems just as real as everything else.
Right.
And that was like, that's when the documentary, I think, really got its claws into me, because that was like within the first like 40 minutes of the movie.
And we saw a version that was 2 hours, 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, because the theatrical run of the movie is 1 hour or 115 minutes. So we saw basically the director's cut.
My favorite also was the large gangster that dressed up like a woman.
The Divine.
Yeah, I call him the Divine of the gangsters.
Yeah. Well, the thing about.
And then he ran for the workers' party.
Yeah. Some workers' parliament, I guess they called it.
Yeah.
And he wanted to do it just so he could shake down the communities.
Yeah, he had more control over a couple neighborhoods where there'd be like 10,000 communists, supposedly.
Or not even communists.
And then you show them shaking down store owners.
No, it wasn't about communists, because even still to this day, if you're a communist, if you're come out as a communist,
yeah,
they'll kill you.
Yeah.
That's people live in just fear.
This is in Taiwan, by the way.
Indonesia.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Indonesia. North Sumatra?
Sumatra? Okay.
I believe.
Sorry.
But yeah, like, it's...
I got the two movies confused for a
but
second.
But it's crazy, because this movie has, like, the audacity to humanize evil. And I watched an interview with the director, and the director said, like, he's like, there is a difference in, like, the way when you describe a person, like, there's a way, two different ways, approaches to, like, describe them. An evil human being, or a human being who has done evil things. And there's an important distinction there.
There is.
Because there's no such thing as monsters. Like, there isn't. There's no such thing as pure, unadulterated evil. It's just not there. Like, just like these guys, there's always a justification for it. Like, people don't engage in this stuff without thinking they're right.
Right.
You know, even Hitler thought he was right. However fucked up the justifications are, yeah, that's one thing.
And it's because
it doesn't make them any less wrong.
And it's because you convince yourself of something. So, like, this reminds me of a passage I was reading the other day, where, you know, if you want to come off as benevolent and friendly, you become so benevolent and friendly that it overtakes you.
Yeah.
And so by these guys trying to embody, like, being the gangsters and, like, the hardasses that they admired so through cinema, they became them. And there's no room for anything else, because that is your controlling way and want.
Yeah, they're living in
and
a
fantasy.
And so
it's a fantasy, but it also comes into your sense of being. So it's
how you identify.
How you identify. And so there is no right or wrong inherently. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that sense? It's
no,
not
there
like,
isn't.
Yeah,
no,
I'm not being evil. You know, I'm going
to
be evil.
Going back to the word I was struggling to find before, the relativity of morality.
Yes.
And justice. They are relative things to different cultures.
Yep.
You know, our social mores have no bearing on the social mores of other countries. You know what I mean?
We think
like,
they
as
do.
We impose them on other countries for sure. We definitely do. Because we are obviously righteous.
I thought you were going to say right, and I was going to laugh.
No, I mean, I meant that sarcastically. We're obviously righteous. Because,
yeah.
Like, I mean, there's this idea that, like, our morality is so progressive that we have the right to dictate what other people's morality should be in other societies and cultures. I don't think that's entirely fair.
No.
Or right to do. And it gets us into a lot of situations and problems that, like, we all feel as a country because of it. Because we're talking about, like, systematic beliefs that have been prevalent for thousands of years sometimes.
Yep.
You know. And also, another aspect I thought was really, really interesting is that, like, going back to what you said about, like, how they engage the movies of their time for ideas, and how to act and look and dress and the sadistic, actually inspiration for further their sadism, is that, like...
Thanks, Al Pacino.
Like, those movies that inspired them at the time, like, informed their reality, right?
Right.
Like you said. But I also think it's really... really interesting that when they started making a movie about what they were doing,
mm-hmm.
like, then that's when it actually, the reality of the situation was actually driven home for them.
Right.
It was more real than reality, than actually doing it.
Right.
Because movies had such a hold over their perception.
Right.
That, like, when they did a movie and they did all, they reenacted all the horrible things they did, it actually started making them realize how horrible it was.
And they actually got to the point where some scenes they were like, okay, we're done.
Well, yeah.
Really,
Anwar Kongo couldn't even handle getting through a scene where he played a torture victim.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it. And that's kind of like the... And that happens towards the end of the movie because it is the big moment of revelation.
Right.
Where he actually feels guilt in a real way. And he's not trying to justify it anymore because he feels like this experience has let him empathize with his victims. Which is a unique opportunity, and that's why it's such a unique documentary.
Maybe we should just start putting serial killers and stuff into movies.
Yeah, and have them reenact what they did.
So, Charlie Manson.
Yeah. No, I don't think Charlie Manson's too crazy.
I'm joking.
So that's the thing about these people, they're not crazy.
I know.
They're pretty eloquent, well-spoken. There's even one of Anwar Kongo's, like, buddies that shows up, like...
You talking about the one that takes his family to the mall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shows up about an hour into the movie, is fully aware of...
What he's doing.
What he did. Like, even to the point to call it sadism. Like, the other people, they will not call it... We weren't sadistic. Like...
Right.
Even though they were. I mean, because they unnecessarily, like, tortured people to death. They didn't just kill them, they tortured them to death.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times. And did it with a lot of glee and righteousness.
Yep.
And he
calls it war. He's like, you know...
Well, that's how he justified it.
He justifies it by, like, war, yeah.
Even though it wasn't a war. It was a manhunt.
Yep.
Like, it was just... But that's how he...
The Red Scare.
But he recognizes it as a justification.
Yep.
He said, you have to tell yourself things to be able to get through the day. You have to convince yourself sometimes of things. And that's, like, it's startling. It's shocking. It's an incredibly shocking movie.
And again, it was so long, but I, like, was never... Yeah. My interest was never deterred.
Well, because we always, like, you know, we talk about this kind of stuff, like the relativity of morality and stuff like that a lot. But, like... It's very rarely we ever get to take these concepts out of the abstract.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to sit there and discuss social mores and justifications in the context of, like, a classroom and academic sense, and then to actually...
See it
is kind of... It's powerful.
It is.
It's, like, the most important movie I've maybe seen ever, or in a very long time. It had a profound effect on me. It did. And these are things I've always thought about, and I always understood these concepts.
Right.
The banality of evil. Or that nobody... There's no such thing as monsters is something that I really believe. Even when it comes to, like, recent events, like the Boston bombings and that kid and stuff. The one that's a surviving brother. Like, he's not a monster. Like, he's a human being. Like, you need to put him into perspective to understand what would make a person do something like that to ever change anything, but people just don't have time for that. It's like either you're good or you're bad sometimes, and especially the way the media portrays things, it's kind of ridiculous, and it sells everybody. It's kind of talking down to you, treats you like a child, and it's not decent enough to let you make your own decisions.
Right.
Which is another aspect of this film too, is how society's reacted, or social society. Or the, like, media and things like that, how they've used it.
Yeah, because they show some interviews with them in their homeland, and it's, like...
All propaganda.
It's all propaganda.
Yeah. Very
They even talk about, like, the propaganda films.
They all know it's propaganda.
Yeah.
And because even further, any, like, rally that they have where there's large crowds and stuff like that, every single one of those people is paid to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking incredible. Like, they are living in a facade, they know it, and they do not care. It's crazy.
It is crazy. It's crazy to, like, when you watch it, like the rallies and stuff.
Yeah.
Or I think the moment that hit me most was when they were talking about the propaganda film they played in the schools.
Yeah.
And how they make the younger ones sit up front, and as you get older, you move back in the theater.
Yeah.
So it becomes so instilled in you from such a young age that it's like you don't question it.
No, exactly.
It's crazy to me.
But the thing, even about that though, like when the death squad guys are discussing the propaganda film, they're totally aware that it's propaganda.
No, I know.
Like, there's communist women never, like, ran around dancing naked, and there was no evil. They weren't monsters and blah blah blah. Like,
yeah, they say that.
They know that, but they're like, it's so important for people to think that to be able to, again, justify their behavior and to justify their feelings towards
it. Yep.
It's fucking... That movie just blew my mind.
I'd watch it again soon.
I haven't had my mind blown from, like, a movie or a documentary since I was, like, 14.
Wow.
Just because I didn't know shit back then. And even though, like I said, I was aware of these things, and it kind of reinforces a lot of my personal beliefs about humanity, about human nature, it's still shocking to see it actually there. Because, like I said, it's not abstract anymore. It's a real tangible thing.
Sorry to yawn.
It's okay.
Sorry, I was thinking about Ryan Gosling.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I mean, who would you recommend this movie to? I mean, I'd recommend it to anybody. But, like, say, what's the barrier for entry as far as, like, age?
Age?
Like, age appropriate for something like this. I'd say, like, 15.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, 15 or maybe, like, late teens. And only because of how gruesome it gets at points.
And also, like, the density of the subject matter.
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, like, early teens and on.
I'd say, yeah, because once you get into high school, you start becoming aware of justifications and social dynamics.
Yep.
And how those kind of things work. And I think, and, like, you know, bullies and shit like that. You know, once you've had enough time to live through a little bit of it, have some type of context and perspective, and I think something like this would be awesome. Like, yep. Something that should be watched in schools and stuff like that. I think it's a little politically pandering to... Because even it does kind of betray its own conceit sometimes, because it's like communist good, this regime bad at points.
Mm-hmm.
Not directly or anything like that, but there's definitely that is a little bit prevalent there. And it kind of doesn't really address the fact a lot that a lot of the people they killed weren't actually communists. They were just kind of enemies they had.
Yeah.
They were just kind of indiscriminately killing Chinese people.
Oh, yeah.
Because this movie does not give you much historical background. It gives you what you need to know for context to what you're about to watch, and that's it. It does not delve into any depth. And it didn't need to, either. Like, just that's something you can just look into yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, anyways, I don't know. Really, really loved it.
I did, too. I'll probably watch it again the next couple days.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's super... Like I said, it's dense, and it's worth rewatching. And because the first time you watch it...
And some of the imagery is really pretty.
Oh, it's beautifully shot, too, yeah. For a documentary.
Yep.
And because a lot of the... And you can tell, like, not much of this was premeditated, like, as far as shot compositions and things like that. This is very, like, fly on the wall at times.
Yep.
And it's really, really great. Yeah, so that's a definite recommend from me.
Me too.
Yeah, it's like, if you can, go out, support this film, buy it when it comes out in Blu-ray. If the local and video on demand, like, rent it. If it's playing in a local theater, go see it. Like, it's worth your time. It's worth supporting something like this, because it's a small grassroots film, you know? Like, it could have... If Errol Morris and Werner Herzog had not picked this up at festival, you probably wouldn't have been hearing about it.
Right.
I mean, the right Errol Morris, of course, like, big documentary filmmaker, he has been for a long time. Werner Herzog, crazy German
director, crazy.
who's also made some fantastic documentaries himself. And yeah, if it wasn't for them, like, this movie could have fallen by the wayside very, very easily. So I'm thankful that it got picked up.
Yep.
And it's going to be distributed and stuff, because it's really, really, really powerful, really, really important, I think, and it's unique. I've never seen something that is this candid or this in-depth about this type of subject matter.
Because you learn the history while you're seeing other, like, future time unfold.
Because
it was a part of history I wasn't really aware of.
Me neither. Yeah, I didn't. I knew about it.
No, but you know what I mean? I wasn't, like, super, you know. Knowledgeable about it. So to learn something from the past, but then to see how it's unfolded into the future and present is really...
How it's directly affected
their it's
present
really,
regime
it's really
and lifestyles.
It's really compelling.
Yeah. Really, really fantastic. Well, I think that's going to about do it for us today, Sarah.
Oh, really?
Unless we have something else to blather on about.
Not really.
Yeah. So thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
Actually, why don't you give out... what's your Twitter handle there, Sarah?
It is Rhyme Scheme.
At Rhyme Scheme?
Yeah, at Rhyme Scheme.
At Rhyme Scheme. Mine is at Natural
_
Gamers. That's what it is.
Follow us.
Yeah. You can follow us and you can hear some of our funny things, and always be able to keep up to date with this podcast and articles on the site.
Wow, we're getting really good at self-promoting.
Yeah, gotta plug your shit. Ugh. Plug it! Plug it up.
So why don't you plug it up and we'll end this thing.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.